The Katra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome back. We're diving deep today into, well, a pivotal moment in history, the Industrial Revolution. And, you know, usually the first thing that pops into mind is James Watt.
Yeah.
And that iconic steam engine.
Absolutely. That's the image we all have, the machine. But today we're looking at it through William Rosen's fascinating book, The Most Powerful Idea in the World. And his core argument really flips that image on its head.
How so?
Well, he poses this question. Did the modern world really get started because of one brilliant machine, the steam engine, or was it actually sparked by something bigger, a brilliant idea about how to invent things in the first place?
Okay. So machine versus the process of invention. That's a key distinction. And our mission here is really to unpack Rosen's argument that humanity didn't just get lucky with one great gadget. We actually built a system, a self-reinforcing, repeatable way to generate new technologies. And understanding that system, well, that's pretty essential knowledge if you want to grasp any big technological shift happening now, like AI or green energy.
Definitely. And to really appreciate his argument, it helps to know a bit about the author, William Rosen. He lived from 1955 to 2016. And interestingly, he wasn't, say, a physics professor or an 18th century legal scholar.
Right. His background was different.
Yeah. He came from the world of publishing. He was an editor, a publisher at some major houses like Simon & Schuster.
And that perspective, I think, is what makes his work so powerful. He wasn't stuck in one academic lane. He was brilliant at synthesis, wasn't he?
Exactly. A master integrator. He could pull together threads from, you know, thermodynamics, the nitty-gritty of patent law, the challenges of metallurgy, even corporate finance.
Wow.
And weave them all together into this single coherent story. He shows you how it all connects.
He's really a systems thinker then, looking at the whole picture, not just the engine itself.
That's the perfect way to put it. He's showing the architecture behind the invention. He makes the case that, say, intellectual property law was just as physically crucial to the steam engine's success as the metal it was made from.
Okay, so let's dig into that central idea. Rosen's saying that this incredible exponential progress we've seen, it didn't spring directly from the steam engine itself.
Right.
It came from the whole setup, the architecture around it. He really wants to challenge that lone genius myth, you know, the idea of one inventor having a sudden eureka moment that changes everything.
Yeah, he argues that's just not how it worked. Innovation, he says, is cumulative. It builds on itself, it depends on collaboration, and critically, it relies on the system being in place.
So before the Industrial Revolution, invention was kind of sporadic, hit or miss?
Pretty much. Dependent on luck, maybe a wealthy patron. But Rosen argues that afterwards it became something more continuous, something scalable, because this reliable system was established. And he points to three absolute bedrock pillars for this invention of invention.
Three pillars. Okay, what are they?
So, pillar one, a solid scientific method, a way to actually understand how the world works based on evidence and experiment.
Makes sense.
Pillar two, a proper legal framework. And the big one here is patents protecting intellectual property, which gives people a reason to take huge financial risks.
Right, the incentive structure.
Exactly. And pillar three, precision engineering. Just the basic physical capability to build the things that scientists and inventors were designing. You need all three.
And it's amazing how far back he traces the roots of this. It doesn't just start with Watt.
Not at all. He goes way back, centuries even,
right,
looking at the pure science needed just to think about harnessing steam power. He talks about the ancient Greeks and vacuums through the scientific revolution demanding actual measurements, not just theories. It all builds towards this really pressing economic problem in 18th century England.
Which was?
Flooded coal mines. They were digging deeper for coal, hitting water, and desperately needed a way to pump it out.
Okay, so let's walk through how these pillars came together. The first part is the science, right? Understanding the vacuum.
Yes, the power of nothing. Seems counterintuitive. But to use steam, you first had to grasp the concept of a vacuum and atmospheric pressure.
And some of those early scientists were real characters, like Torricelli with his barometer proving the air actually has weight, or Otto von Guericke.
Oh, the Magdeburg hemisphere?
Yes. In the 1650s, pulling two metal halves together, pumping the air out, and then
teams of horses couldn't pull them apart. Just amazing visual proof of atmospheric pressure.
It wasn't just theory, it was dramatic. And this builds on Robert Boyle's work defining pressure laws, leading eventually to Dennis Papin.
Right. Papin was key. He was the first to really suggest using steam to push a piston up and then letting it condense to create that vacuum underneath, pulling the piston down.
So the basic concept of the steam engine rests on, what, like 150 years of just pure science beforehand?
Easily. Foundational stuff. And then this science crashes into that urgent economic need you mentioned, the flooding mines.
Yeah.
Coal and tin mines were vital, but water threatened to shut them down.
Enter Thomas Newcomen around 1712.
Newcomen builds the first practical working atmospheric engine. It did the job. It pumped water. But it was incredibly inefficient.
Why was that?
Because it worked by filling a cylinder with steam, then spraying cold water inside the cylinder to condense the steam and create the vacuum. So you were constantly heating the whole metal cylinder up, then cooling it right down over and over.
Okay. Wasted a huge amount of heat then.
Exactly. It guzzled coal. But it worked, and it proved the principle. You can turn heat into useful work.
And this is where James Watt comes in, but not as the first inventor, more as an optimizer.
Precisely. He was an instrument maker, very meticulous. He was given a Newcomen engine model to repair, and he became obsessed with how much fuel it wasted. He started analyzing it systematically, like a lab experiment.
Applying scientific rigor to this industrial machine.
Yes. And that led to his huge breakthrough idea, supposedly during a walk in 1765. The separate condenser.
Okay, what did that do?
He realized you only needed to cool the steam, not the entire cylinder. So he designed a separate chamber, always kept cold, where the steam would rush into and condense. The main cylinder could stay hot all the time.
Ah, so much more efficient.
Massively. It cut fuel consumption by about 75%, a fourfold increase in efficiency. This wasn't just tinkering, it was applied thermodynamics.
A brilliant technical leap. But an idea on paper isn't an engine, right? How do you actually build it, fund it, protect it? This must bring in the second pillar, the legal and business side.
Absolutely. Enter Matthew Boulton. He was a sharp, visionary industrialist with capital. The Boulton and Watt partnership was this perfect fusion. Watt's technical genius, Boulton's business sense, and crucially, his money.
And the patent was key here.
Hugely important. Rosen emphasizes that Watt's 1769 patent for the separate condenser wasn't just a piece of paper. It was the financial bedrock.
It gave them security.
Exactly. It granted them a 25-year monopoly. And that security was the only reason Boulton was willing to pour money into years and years of really difficult, expensive R&D needed to make Watt's design actually work reliably.
So the patent system basically turned an invention from like a secret recipe into a bankable asset.
That's a great way to put it. It incentivized that big, risky, long-term private investment that was needed.
Okay, so they have the science, they have the legal protection and funding, but they still hit a wall.
They did. A very solid metal wall. This brings us to the third pillar, precision engineering. Watt's designs, especially needing that separate condenser and tight seals, were just too advanced for the metalworking skills of the time.
What was the specific problem?
He needed piston and cylinder that fit together really tightly. Almost perfectly round and smooth. Otherwise, the air would leak in, the vacuum would be lost, and the engine wouldn't work well, or at all. The blacksmiths just couldn't make them precise enough.
A manufacturing bottleneck. So how did they solve that?
Well, this is one of the most fascinating twists in the story. The solution came, ironically, from warfare.
From the military?
Yeah. A guy named John Wilkinson, nicknamed Iron Mad Wilkinson. He was a cannon manufacturer. And he patented a new, much more accurate method for boring out cannon barrels in 1774.
Why did he need accuracy for cannons?
To make them stronger and safer, less likely to explode. But that same precision needed for a cannon barrel
was exactly what Watt needed for his engine cylinders.
Bingo. Wilkinson's boring mill, developed for making better weapons, turned out to be the key enabling technology for the steam engine, a total feedback loop between military and industrial tech.
That's incredible. The Industrial Revolution kind of hinged on a cannon maker.
In a very real way, yes. Without Wilkinson's precision, Watt's efficient engine might have just stayed a drawing.
Wow.
Yeah.
And was there a final piece to this manufacturing puzzle?
Sort of the capstone, yes. Henry Maudslay, he's considered the father of machine tools.
Mm-hmm.
He developed things like the precision screw-cutting lathe.
What did that allow?
Standardization. Interchangeable parts. Moving away from every engine being a unique, handcrafted object towards a system where you could make parts reliably and assemble them. That's what truly made it scalable.
Okay, so the three pillars finally clicked into place.
Yeah.
The underlying science, the patent system for incentives, and the precision manufacturing to actually build it.
That's Rosen's invention of invention. The system was complete.
Let's try to boil this down into maybe three core takeaways for listeners. The first one seems obvious, but crucial. Innovation isn't a lightning strike. It's a system.
Absolutely. The reason the revolution really took off in Britain was because those three elements, science, patents, precision, came together there. And it's still true today, right? If you're, say, launching a tech startup, you need the great R&D, sure. But you also need a smart IP strategy, and you need a practical way to actually build or deploy your product at scale. If one of those legs is weak, the whole thing can wobble or fall.
Right. The second theme feels like technology feeding itself, making itself faster.
Yeah, what Rosen calls the autocatalytic loop. Better steam engines could power bigger and better machine tools.
Which then build even more precise and powerful engines.
Exactly. It's a positive feedback cycle. And you see that driving exponential growth today too, right? Think about Moore's Law in computing or how quickly AI seems to be developing. One advance enables the next, faster and faster.
And the third big theme has to be the death of the lone genius idea.
Completely dismantled. Watt was brilliant, no doubt, but he absolutely needed Boulton for the business side and the money. He needed Wilkinson for the manufacturing. He stood on the shoulders of Boyle, Papin, Newcomen.
It's a team sport.
Always has been, especially for big breakthroughs. Today's major challenges, whether it's climate change or disease, they're solved by interdisciplinary teams building on tons of prior work.
Rosen's book is full of really sharp, memorable ways of putting things. Maybe we can share a few key ideas that capture his perspective.
Sure. One I really like gets right at the heart of it. He says something like, "The steam engine's history is often told as a story of coal and iron. In truth, it is a story of ideas. The idea of a vacuum, the idea of a patent, and the idea of a perfectly bored cylinder. The most important material in the Industrial Revolution was gray matter."
Oh, that's good. Shifting focus from the physical stuff to the concepts, the knowledge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And another highlights Watt's methodology. James Watt did not invent the first steam engine, but he was the first to ask the right questions about it. He applied the metrics of the laboratory to the machinery of the mine.
So it wasn't just clever tinkering. It was systematic, quantitative analysis. Measurement mattered.
Immensely. And then there's the crucial role of the system, the institutions. The patent system transformed innovation from a craft secret into a public resource, creating incentives for improvement while ensuring that knowledge would spread.
That's powerful. It explains why making inventions protectable actually helped knowledge spread rather than hoarding it. It created a market for ideas.
Precisely. It incentivized both invention and disclosure.
So, thinking practically, how can someone listening apply these insights from history today?
Well, for anyone involved in business or strategy, the big lesson is, think about innovation as a system problem. Don't just focus on the R&D lab. You need to integrate the legal side, the financial side, the manufacturing or deployment side right from the start.
Yeah, you can have a brilliant product idea, but if your supply chain falls apart or you can't protect your IP,
it won't succeed. It's about the whole ecosystem. And for policymakers, maybe the lesson is about supporting that entire ecosystem too.
How so?
Well, funding basic fundamental science, the kind of stuff Torricelli did with vacuums that might not have an obvious payoff for decades, and also ensuring the legal frameworks, like patents, are strong and stable enough to encourage those really big, risky, long-term private investments, like the Boulton and Watt partnership.
And maybe for personal learning, when we hear about a new technology,
ask those Rosen questions. Don't just look at the shiny device. Ask, what underlying science made this possible? What legal or business structure is making it viable? And what manufacturing or scaling challenge had to be overcome? It gives you a much deeper understanding.
That definitely changes how you'd read tech news. For me, the most surprising thing, honestly, was the Wilkinson connection. The idea that the whole Industrial Revolution was kind of held up for years because they couldn't bore a perfect cylinder, and that the solution came from a cannon maker. It just highlights how interconnected and, frankly, sometimes fragile this whole process of progress is. It really is a system.
Yeah, that's my final thought, too. Progress isn't something you just command into existence. It sort of emerges, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
When you get the right conditions, when science and law and business and engineering start feeding off each other in the right way. It's the process for generating and applying knowledge, that codified system, that's the truly powerful idea.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.